Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One.
At the time, we're still kids and not understanding the impact we had on so many people. Even 20 years later, I could be dropping my kids off somewhere, and somebody can be like, hey, what's up, Dwayne? I remember, oh, man, that was a great run. I was at this game or that game. And just to see the smiles on people's faces 20 years later from the memories we were able to create is just amazing.
And our guest this week, Dwayne Jones, who just came back to Hawk Hill as an assistant coach on Billy Lang's staff. Of course, Dwayne Jones was a star for the Hawks, a key part of that team for St. Joe's that just had a magical season back in 2003-2004. And Dwayne, thanks so much for taking the time.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So let's talk a little bit coming back to St. Joe's. Is it a little surreal to be back on campus?
Yeah, definitely. It's surreal being back. I mean, the campus has changed so much. You know, I think I left almost 20 years ago, and you know, see the growth of the campus. It's kind of a great. It's amazing to be back.
I mean, it's your alma mater, so obviously it's a special place for you. But what made this opportunity the right one for you at this time in your career?
I think, you know, just obviously my relationship with Coach Lang. You know, going back many years. You know, funny story. His wife was my academic advisor when I was at St. Joe's. So. You know, I know, you know, known the family for a long time. So that was a big part of it. You know, obviously, you know, coming back to my alma mater, it's been great. And honestly, like, the great group of guys we have, staff and players, like, it's a great time to be back on Hawk Hill.
Did you always figure during your playing days that you would coach eventually?
Honestly, it was something I probably started thinking about my late 20s, probably 28, 29, still playing. You know, I was actually down in with the Texas Legends at the time, the G League Dallas's team. And, you know, just in the course of playing down there, the GM at the time was just, you know, talking to me one day. And he was like, hey, I think maybe one day, like, you could be a coach just by, you know, your presence, you know, on the floor, or the way, you know, or, you know, trying to help your teammates and the way you're explaining the information that you're getting from the coaching staff. Like, that could be a path you could choose one day. And that was kind of like the first time I honestly, like, thought about it, and then just kind of turned into what it turned into.
Once you started it, did it take right away? Like, once you kind of got waist deep into it, you were like, yes, this is where I need to be?
It took a year or two, because honestly, for me, I transitioned literally from, I was playing, I was 33 at the time, I was in between if I still wanted to continue to play. You know, I had a young family at the time. My oldest was in second grade, my youngest was in kindergarten. And, you know, it took probably a year and a half to kind of get out of that player's mindset and really start to, like, lock in on all the details that go into coaching. And, you know, I could not have asked for a better opportunity to intern with the Sixers at the time. And I was around a lot of great coaches, Coach Brown, Lloyd Pierce, Billy Lang, Kevin Young, John Bryant. I was around a lot of great coaches, Jim O'Brien, who all kind of, you know, took me under their wing and kind of helped guide me.
You talk about that transition in that first year of coaching. How difficult was it to stop playing Because I know for a lot of guys, that is a tough time when you're kind of weighing that. And a lot of times the physical aspect comes into it. What are you capable of doing? But were you at peace at it, or did it kind of gnaw at you that you still, every time you maybe the phone rang, you thought, well, maybe I can give it one more try?
There was a little, there was a couple times where like, oh man, I could still play. But, you know, luckily for me, I was, you know, my first probably year and a half with the Sixers, all I was really doing was a lot of playing. So I was on the floor with a lot of guys. So I was still able to compete, just not with a jersey on when, you know, when it came, you know, 7 o'clock in game time. So I was able to, you know, still be able to play and hoop that way, but also start to slowly get into the coaching part of it.
So let's talk about your life growing up. Were you just basketball all the time as a kid, or were you playing whatever was going on, you know, in the neighborhood or at school?
Probably majority of it was basketball. Honestly, like growing up, part of me wanted to play football just because that's what my dad did. He played at West Virginia University. And that was kind of always, you know, I always thought about playing football. I think, you know, he saw the skinny kid and was like, I don't think football is for you. So basketball, probably from the time I was 8 or 9 years old, is kind of the path I've taken. Played a little bit of soccer in high school, but yeah, mostly it was all basketball for me.
When did you start to realize that you were getting maybe a little more attention with basketball than other kids, and maybe you were getting picked for teams and stuff like that before everybody else? Was there kind of a tangible moment?
Yeah, I think for me, it was probably around 13 or 14, going into eighth grade, going into high school, and just having, you know, a couple people say like, hey, you actually might be able to get a scholarship. You might be able to go to school playing basketball. And that was kind of my first like, okay, maybe I could do this. And then being around, you know, Jameer and some of the other guys, you know, in Chester, you know, being able to kind of keep up and seeing the attention they were getting and understanding like I could, you know, I'm on the floor with these guys. So that's when it kind of started to really think about me, like just like kind of focusing in on it.
So when you start looking at colleges, were there other schools in the mix for your services, or was it always going to be St. Joe's?
No, I had a few schools on my list. Took an official visit to Virginia Tech. I went to Rhode Island. I know early on, Villanova was in a little bit early when I was in like 10th, 11th grade. I remember taking an unofficial visit there. But yeah, I would probably say there was a big chunk of me that kind of always thought in the back of my mind I was going to go to St. Joe's. And obviously having two of my AAU teammates go there ahead of me, and Jameer Nelson and Jeff Miller, I think that kind of was always going to probably be where I ended up going.
So when you go there, what's the transition like? I mean, from a social standpoint and from a basketball standpoint, did it take a little while to adjust to life on campus and to adjust to college basketball, or was it a pretty seamless move?
Yeah, I would say it took a little time adjusting for me. I think like most kids, you know, you go from, you know, being a man in high school when you're thinking, okay, I'm going to show up on college campus and, you know, just being confident in myself, like, you know, I'm going to get there and I'm going to play a bunch of minutes. I, you know, I was playing with Jameer a couple years ago. Now I'm back playing with Jameer. Like, it'll be fine. But, I, you know, coming here, I remember after that first practice, and I was like, oh, all right. I'm out here with some grown men. So, you know, it took a little bit, thankfully. You know, for me, I was kind of able to, at the time, it was a little rough redshirting. But I think for me, it was the best part, to be able to kind of sit back my first year, get adjusted to the college life, on the floor and off the floor.
Do you remember kind of going along with that, the first moment when you felt like, oh yeah, I can do this, I'm going to be fine?
Yeah, I think it was probably, I remember we had a walkthrough, just my redshirt year, we had a walkthrough like at Villanova. And I just remember like being on a scout team and just, and, you know, playing really well. And I was like, all right, yeah, it'll take a little bit. But I think next year when I get my opportunity, I think I'll be able to handle this.
So you're part of arguably the greatest group that went through St. Joe's. That 2003-2004 season, take me to the preseason. And what is it kind of, what's the vibe like? You know, what were the expectations in the locker room with you guys, of what you guys were capable of that year?
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of going off the previous year, you know, making it to the NCAA tournament that year, losing in the first round, but then realizing like we got the same group of guys, but like fortunately Jameer came back, which is obviously a huge part. But, you know, looking in the locker room and realizing like most of the guys in the locker room, we've been together for 2 to 3 years at this point. We know each other's game. We're confident in what we can do. And I think with that mindset, and also just how competitive we were with each other, it was always like a friendly rivalry. It didn't matter who was playing against who. We were always trying to make the other one better. and beat the other one. And I think, that was always a big part for us. Cause like, I think our practices were more competitive than games at times, just because we all wanted to win so bad, but we were able to focus in when it came time for games to understand like, hey, we're all in this together.
So you guys run the table during that regular season, you get to the number one ranking. Was there a point in the year where it was tangible that things were different? Like all of a sudden you've got a dozen guys coming to practice to talk to you. Could you tell, or was it a kind of a slow burn that you were getting a little bit more attention as things went on?
Yeah, I think for us, for the most part, it was kind of like a slow burn. Like we were ranked all year and it was like slowly like creeping up the rankings, and, we would kind of pay attention to, some of the other guys, other teams that were ranked at the time and undefeated. And, once one of those guys lost, we're like, okay, we're still in this. And then I remember, I think the Eagles that year lost in the conference championship, unfortunately. And it literally felt like the next day, the entire city was just focused on us. And we're like, oh, all right, here we go. It's go time.
Was that difficult to deal with?
No, I don't think so. I think, Coach Martelli did a great job of just getting us to understand, like, whatever we had done previously didn't matter. It was all about the next game and just focusing in on the next game. I don't think at any point throughout that season we talked about we're going undefeated, this and that. It was just like, who's the next opponent? And that, I got to give credit to Coach Martelli and the coaching staff. Like, they did a great job of keeping us focused on just that next day.
What are some of your favorite memories from that regular season? Like, are there a couple games or a couple moments that really stand out?
Yeah. I mean, I think, starting the year in Madison Square Garden against Gonzaga, I think we were ranked, they were ranked. It was a big matchup. Just, the energy in the building. It was super exciting. We were out in California and we played Cal that year in Oakland. Like that, big energy feel, playing in the NBA arena, like that was fun. And even some of the other games we had. I mean, Rhode Island had always been tough for us, and that was a game like it was back and forth until the end. And thankfully we were able to pull that game out. But yeah, just some of those games like that was just just incredible along the run.
You talked about you had a history playing with Jameer, and Delonte West was a big key part of that. Those two guys were kind of the top offensive threats. What was it like kind of playing alongside them and some of the things they do and the clutch shots they would make and stuff like that? What did it get hard not to take for granted that these guys are going to do special things?
Yeah, I mean, it got to a point where we just expected it. We knew we had to do our jobs to make sure they did their job. I think me and John Bryan still joke to this day, we call ourselves the All-American screeners. Because, we just, we'll try to get those guys open, get Pat Carroll open, get Chet open and kind of get out the way and go rebound. And if we occasionally got a pass, we had to catch it. But yeah, I mean, those playing with those guys were amazing. And yeah, there were definitely times where it was like, all right, Jameer got us. Oh, Delonte has us. Oh, Pat has us. So we just, kind of had to do our job and stay out the way.
So you get to the NCAA tournament, you're a one seed, and I was there. I actually covered your guys' selection Sunday party that day. And the memory that is burned in my head is your name's not up on the board for 5 seconds. Billy Packer, the CBS analyst, just couldn't wait to unload and how he didn't think you guys were a one seed. In the time, you've got to be diplomatic and stuff like that. But did that irritate the group? Was it fuel? Because I just thought it was in poor taste. If you feel that way, fine. Give these kids that have worked so hard their moment, and then maybe we can discuss. Like, how did it land with you guys?
It was just another chip on our shoulder, honestly. I think most of us, all of us, at one point in our lives had been doubted and talked about and, little St. Joe's and, under-recruited and things like that. So I think at that point, we just used it as fuel. Like, we were like, okay, all right, that's fine. We understand how you feel, but all right, we'll show you. We'll have an opportunity. You'll see comes Thursday when that game, when we play that first game. And then, we play the next game. And I think he went to Wake Forest.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Okay. So I know that was one of the notches on our belt that year. So, it was, we definitely took it as fuel.
How much just fun was that experience? To be a one seed, to win those three games, you get, out of the first weekend. So you've got another week to kind of basket it, and all the attention you guys got. It was fun for the city. How much fun was it to be in the middle of it?
I mean, it was exciting. I mean, it was fun, honestly, like looking back at it, I remember more of the times off the floor than on the floor. because there was so much excitement, obviously, on campus, in the city, you know, with you know, being in, whether it's the cafeteria, whether it was, you know, walking around at Acme, like people were just excited about us. And, you know, we were just excited to get another opportunity to, you know, to play and to be together.
What was Coach Martelli like during this? Because he was everywhere from a media standpoint. And I think that was a little bit by design, is he handled a lot of the distractions, so you guys just play. And if I'm speaking out of school, but that's what it felt like to me as somebody in the media. But what was it like being with him during that run?
I mean, it was great, because honestly, like, Coach Martelli never changes. He was always, it didn't matter what happened the day before, a week before, like every time it was time to come focus in on practice, it was always focusing on practice. And I think he did a great job of letting us just focus on basketball.
So you get to Oklahoma State in the Elite Eight. You play Oklahoma State and you guys battle. Great game goes back and forth. John Lucas hits that three. What is going through your mind as that ball's in the air?
I mean, it happened in slow motion, because I mean, I, you know, honestly, I remember at halftime of that game thinking to myself, like, I think we might go to the Final Four. I mean, the game's not over, but I think we got a chance. And I just, you know, I remember it was back and forth. And, you know, the shot goes up and it's like, oh, my goodness, we're down. And I, you know, still I remember running back on offense and I was like, OK, Jameer has the ball. We're at least going to overtime. And I just, you know, up until that shot unfortunately missed, I still was thinking like, OK, we're still going to win this game. And, you know, once that didn't happen, we were still kind of all just in shock. But I don't think we were able to kind of comprehend like that it was actually over.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Like, how long did it take to really sink in?
I mean, it took a little while, honestly. But I remember us, you know, being in the locker room and people are crying and upset. And you know, it was just, you know, again, it was just crazy to realize it was over with. But I remember us getting on the bus and going back to the hotel. And the hotel was just full of St. Joe's people, and they were all there supporting us. And we were like, wow, like this is bigger than us, and it's going to continue to be bigger than us. But everybody was there to embrace us and just, you know, obviously everybody was down, but everybody was just proud of what we had, the point we had gotten to.
Yeah. And that leads, like, because I think a lot of times when you're, you know, that college age, you know what you did, like you understand it, but the impact you had on the school, on the alumni, on the city, on college basketball, you know, it seems like moments like that, it really did kind of hit you in the face, like, wow, this was kind of more than an undefeated regular season and a number one seed. Like, this kind of transcended that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, I think it, you know, for us, it took probably years, because, yeah, at the time, you know, we're all, you know, 20, 21, 19, like we're still kids and not understanding like the impact we had on so many people. Even 20 years later, I could be dropping my kids off, you know, somewhere and somebody can be like, hey, what's up, Dwayne? I remember, oh, man, that was a great run. I was at this game or that game. And just to see the smiles on people's faces 20 years later from, you know, the memories we were able to create is just amazing.
So the next year you come back, obviously Delonte, Jameer, you guys still had a lot of, you guys are still a very good team, but the two headliners go to the NBA. What's it like coming into camp that year? And also, I've also always wondered, when you have a run like that and it's like climbing a mountain, you know, and it's hard and every game gets exponentially harder. The next year, regardless of who's coming back, when you start over at ground level, like, is that difficult emotionally to kind of get back that, all right, regardless, we got to go through 30 more games and got to do all this? Like, is it difficult under normal circumstances, but then also, you know, when you're kind of looking at the squad without your two leading scorers like that?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely, you know, had to refocus. Obviously, we lost, you know, two first round picks, but again, I think I'll give credit to Coach Martelli. I think he did a great job of galvanizing that team and saying like, hey, Jameer and Delonte are gone. We still have a lot of good pieces here. Guys are going to have to pick it up, but I still believe in this locker room. So that gave us the confidence to believe in ourselves.
How did your game evolve over your career at St. Joe's?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think each year I got I was able to get a little bit more responsibility on both ends of the floor. You know, I'll give credit to Coach Matt Brady for just kind of staying in my ear and trying to keep me focused, you know, on my growth, you know, from my redshirt year up until the undefeated year. And then the year after when Mike Rice came in, like everybody did a good job with me just trying to get me to understand like what I needed to do and how I needed to improve like every year, whether it was in the weight room, going to summer sports training, you know, trying to get bigger and stronger and faster and more athletic and just, again, try to understand, you know, the potential I could have.
We need to take a break. We will have more with St. Joseph's University assistant men's basketball coach Dwayne Jones right after this. This is One-on-One.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back on One-on-One, continuing our conversation with former St. Joe's men's basketball star and current St. Joe's men's assistant basketball coach, Dwayne Jones. You were a great rebounder. How much of rebounding is physical attributes, you know, taller, faster, and how much of it is want-to, and how much of it is film, positioning, cerebral? Like, how would you kind of put that pie together as far as what goes into being a great rebounder?
I would say probably 50%+ of it is a want to. I think there's just desire to shot goes up. Like, I'm going to get this basketball. Nobody else is going to get this basketball. I'm grabbing it. I don't care. You know, obviously, like being athletic and being quick to it is key. And then, you know, studying film and getting used to your teammates, like, you know, how they miss. I know for me, playing with guys, I understood, okay, if Pat's shooting, the shot's going to go this way. If Chet's shooting, the shot's going to go this way. Okay, if Jameer drives and he misses the layup, okay, this is where I got to go. So I think it's a combination of all of it. But I think it's just the want to, the grit to understand, like, you got to get in there, you got to get dirty. My philosophy was always, you know, first man to the ball, got to go get the ball.
Did you think professional basketball was a legitimate opportunity for you your entire college career? Like, obviously you're focused on the year and what you're doing with the Hawks, but were you always like, I've got a chance to take this? Or was it something that you felt like as your career progressed, it became more and more the obvious next step?
I think for me, it was gradual thing. You know, I'm not going to lie and say, like, when I got to St. Joe's, I was like, okay, I'm going to go to St. Joe's and go to the NBA. It was, and I wanted to play basketball as long as I could. And just naturally just being at St. Joe's and just getting opportunities, whether it was, you know, working at an Adidas camp in between years and stuff like that. And then obviously playing with two first round picks and seeing those guys make it. I'm like, hey, I think I could get there as well. You know, I play with these guys. I've been able to be in the gym. I've gone to John Arnett workouts and, you know, been in the gym with pros, and I, you know, believe I could hold my own. So I think for me, it was just a gradual belief in myself and putting in the work and people believing in me.
So when you start the professional journey you know, what was it like from the time that the St. Joe season ends and you kind of can focus all your energy on being a pro to the time you signed your first contract?
It was a whirlwind, honestly. You know, I think once the season ended that year, unfortunately, losing in the NIT finals, I think that the next day my mindset was, you know, focusing on the pre-draft camp and trying to get ready while also trying to finish my classwork and graduate. So I was trying to balance those two things out, but my mind and focus was definitely on getting ready for, you know, all the pre-draft stuff, going to workouts, going to Chicago pre-draft camp that year, and, you know, just kind of going through the whole process.
So you signed with Minnesota in the summer of 2005. What's your, you know, when you first go to an NBA camp, was it kind of the, you know, you talk about taking the jump from high school to college, was it kind of the same thing? Like, it feels different taking a step to the NBA level?
Yeah, definitely. It was very similar to, in my opinion, my freshman year at St. Joe's. Like, that first year, you know, with Minnesota, even that summer, I remember we had a workout and remember playing against Mark Mattson, and talk about a tenacious guy full of energy. And I just remember, like, playing against him and Michael Olowokandi and Kevin Garnett. And I just remember, like, ooh, okay, this is different. So, yeah, it was definitely a welcome to the NBA. Like, you know, you're playing with grown men now. Grown men, you're trying to feed their families. And, you know, this 22-year-old kid coming in, like, you're trying to take our minutes. So we got something for you.
Did it feel different kind of in the locker room? Like, did it feel like a business? Was there a point where you kind of, you know, because you come from a small college, a small campus, you know, obviously high profile program that had these incredible special moments. Did it feel different? And I'm not saying better or worse, but just a different feel with how everybody approached their business and stuff like that?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That's kind of looking back at it. Yeah, there were definitely moments where I was like, okay, this is a business. This isn't coming to gym for a couple hours and then you got class. It's like, no, we're trying to win games, jobs, people's livelihoods depend on how you perform day in and day out.
So you make your NBA debut with the Celtics. Do you remember your first game in the NBA, your first regular season game?
Yeah. I remember we played against Portland. I remember I was down in the D League at the time, I think a few days before that. And I know the Celtics had some injuries and they brought me up. And you know, I just remember going through that whole day, going through shoot around, kind of. So that was my first time being active for a game. And I just remember just being excited, like being in the locker room. I remember Ryan Scalabrine, great guy, who's kind of just, hey, you got this, kind of being excited for me, kind of, you know, understanding, like, he could see the nerves in me a little bit. But it was great to have him in the locker room and, you know, some of the other vets. And, you know, I just remember when Coach Rivers called me in and put me in the game, I was like, all right, here we go. And I remember walking out to the floor, and I think, I believe Monty McCutcheon was the ref during that game. And I just remember him coming up to me and he said, oh, hey, how you doing, Dwayne? Just wanted to introduce myself. I said, oh, nice to meet you, sir. And, you know, after that, it was a little bit of a blur, but it was exciting to be out there.
So your pro career, you played a lot of games in the NBA, G League, you traveled overseas. What was kind of the routine year to year? Grind, I think, is the word, you know, when you're moving around like that. How did you kind of approach every season?
I viewed every season was a grind. You know, I think for me, the first couple years, I was, you know, obviously I was a little spoiled, just, you know, being in the NBA and thinking, okay, I'm going to be in the NBA for 12, 15 years. And then after my third year, realizing, okay, this is a process. This is going to be a journey. And, you know, the grind continues. And there was times of, you know, not knowing where I was going to be and having a backpack for this climate, having a backpack for another climate, you know, waiting for a call and short notice. You got to hop on this flight. You got to go here to work out. You got to go there to work out. This team wants to sign you. And then, you know, the overseas part of it. Okay. You have a deal in China. You have a deal in Dominican Republic. And it was just like, all right, let me get the passport back out. And, you know, it's got to keep grinding because it definitely was a business. I definitely, you know, had to support my family. So it was, you know, it was whatever I had to do. And I'll give a lot of credit to my father, who was a construction worker for 30 plus years. I just, you know, remember him waking up every day at you know, 5:30 in the morning, you know, going to work and not complaining, because he understood what he needed to do to provide for us. And that was just the mentality I had. You know, I just had to grind it out.
Kind of to that point, were there tough times, though, where you're waiting on a call and you're frustrated and that you kind of looked in the mirror and go, is it worth it? Should I maybe look another way? Or were you always like, we're just going to keep going until we can't go anymore?
For me, it was always just, I was going to keep grinding it out. You know, I love playing basketball. There were definitely moments where it was like, man, I got to go to this country. I got to go to that country, man. All right. You know, I won't see my kids for 6-7 months, but you know, I got to go. So there were definitely some times when it was definitely, you know, just being in whatever random country I was in, just by myself and just looking at the calendar, like, man, I got, I guess, 3 more months. But it was a grind. There were some times when it was rough, but thankfully I have a great wife, a great support staff with my family who, you know, always had my back, was always there supporting me, always, you know, gave me what I needed, you know, to get through.
I think parts of 5 years in the NBA. What's your favorite NBA memory from your time?
Fortunately enough, I was able to be on a team and play with LeBron James for a couple of years, and just watching, you know, this was him at, I think, 21, 22, and some of this, the great, amazing things he was able to do. And, you know, that, I think, believe it was game 5 in Detroit, when I think he had like 25 out of 26 of our points, and obviously making that run to the finals that year was amazing. You know, it's one of those things where you get to the finals in your second year and you're thinking, oh, I'm going to, you know, I'm with LeBron James, we're going to go to finals every year, I'm going to get rings, and it's going to be great. That was an exciting time, you know, getting an opportunity to, you know, be on a team with Steph Curry and Clay and Draymond, when this was before they, I think it was their first playoff run together, and being part of that and seeing like, oh man, these guys are going to be pretty good. So, you know, seeing those guys, and I've been fortunate enough to be in a locker room with a lot of great players.
The time overseas, I think you mentioned a couple of the places, China, Philippines, Venezuela. What was your favorite overseas experience?
Yeah, I've had a few. Going to the Philippines was pretty cool, just because they're just so excited about basketball. They're just basketball, literally fanatics. And just playing in front of that crowd was great. Qatar was interesting. It was a good experience from like a basketball perspective. Venezuela, you know, it was interesting at times with some of the, you know, off the court things, and, you know, just being in a country like that. But the basketball there was amazing and competitive. And I actually had a really good time playing down there, playing against some of those guys. China was also a good one. So, but yeah, I've been blessed to be in a lot of great places.
You use the word interesting, and I've talked to a lot of guys that have spanned the globe, and it seems like there's a vast wide range of experiences you can have. You can have wonderful, they love the basketball and everything, to I knew I had to be the first one to the bank because only half the checks were going to cash, or I had to get out of town before the government fell. Did you have any, not even necessarily scary, but just like kind of crazy, this could only happen here moments during your international career?
I mean, I've had a few. Remember playing in Turkey, that was literally my first experience overseas. Being in Turkey for 3 weeks, and I just remember after like the first couple weeks, I was like, I don't know if this is for me. I remember we're playing against Cheska in Moscow, and I just, you know, remember how the game was going on. I didn't play a lot. We were down by 20 before I even got in the game, and, you know, I got in the game and nothing really changed. And I just remember at the end of the game, the coach just like laying into me, and I just remember looking around. I was like, what is happening? You know, we were down by 20 before I got in the game. But then, you know, a couple of the Americans that were my teammates were just like, hey, this is just how it goes. Just kind of got to roll with it. That was a crazy story. I remember being in Venezuela, getting there, you know, flying in late at night, and I had to meet our team. A taxi picked me up from the airport, and I remember just like getting pulled over. And I remember just the taxi driver was like, hey, it's okay. It's okay. And I just remember it's being like 3 in the morning. And I got, you know, cops pegging me out the car, trying to look through my stuff. And I'm like, all right, what is going on here? You know, thankfully, you know, nothing ended up happening. But, you know, I've had a lot of interesting moments. But, you know, I view it all as a learning experience, and it's always part of my journey.
And what was the coolest place you played basketball, just from a purely looking around like, wow, I can't believe I'm doing this here? Was there like one place where it's just like, wow, this is incredible?
Overseas?
Yeah.
think there was a couple times in China. I just remember like being in like Beijing or Shanghai, and I was like, oh wow, this is, you know, with packed crowds, and I was like, okay, all right, this is interesting. I never pictured myself when I was a kid in Chester playing in Beijing, China, or being in Qatar, same thing. I was like, yeah, some of these, like a couple of the countries I went to, I didn't even realize were countries before the my agent brought the deal to me. So again, it was a lot of interesting places playing, and you know, a lot of interesting stamps on the passport.
How much does your basketball life experience from that experience at St. Joe's to going overseas, having to battle for everything, how much does this make you a better coach? Because I would imagine you have kind of an emotional skill set toolbox available, that you kind of know what a lot of these guys are going through when it comes to, you know, trying to get better, trying to make a team, stuff like that. You know, how much do you think that has all shaped you into a better coach?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely helped me a lot. You know, I view it as, you know, when I talk to some guys, like I've been where you want to be and I've been where you don't want to be with this game of basketball. And, you know, I've made mistakes and, you know, in my preparation and, you know, taking things for granted, and try to pass that knowledge along. Like, you know, I use the example of getting an opportunity to work with Paul Reed. I just remember, you know, us having our daily, weekly talks. And I just remember like, hey man, like I've been in your shoes. I understand like, you know, some of your frustrations, and, you know, I dealt with it wrong, but I want to help you deal with it right. And, you know, guide you a little bit more. And, you know, again, I think it having the unique experience of, you know, being able to play at a high level university, to be able to play at the highest level in the NBA, and also, you know, going through the long road trips in the G League and the long flights overseas gives me a unique perspective where, you know, I just want to be able to use that to guide the players I get an opportunity to work with.
What is your favorite part of coaching?
I think my favorite part of coaching is just the connection. Just the connection, the seeing guys grow. Again, I use the example of Paul Reed. I'm so proud of that kid and just the work he's put in. And, you know, I joke with him. I'm like, you know, I appreciate you listening to me a little bit. So, but yeah, just it's rewarding to see, you know, guys put in the hard work and having a, you know, hand on that a little bit to guide guys.
Does winning as a player and winning as a coach feel different?
Yes and no. I think, you know, obviously, I think you can never discount, obviously, you know, being on the floor and actively having a role in, you know, scoring or preventing baskets, things like that. But what I didn't realize getting into coaching is how much you get into it, how competitive you get as a coach versus, you know, whether it's the other coaching staff, coaches on your same staff, like how competitive it gets, the juices get going. And you know, when you get a big win, how rewarding it is, how exciting it is.
Yeah, and that was kind of, you talk about like working with a guy like Paul Reed. What is the feeling when something you guys have worked on, you know, maybe off on the side for a couple weeks, and it comes to fruition in a big spot or in a game where it's just like, wow, we did that. You know, that is something I think unique to coaching.
Yeah, definitely. It's truly rewarding to understand, like, you know, the work you're putting in, the time of preparation you're putting in, even before you get an opportunity to get on the floor with guys, to study the game and be able to implement it and express it to those guys, and for them to be able to soak in that knowledge. Because again, you know, a lot of guys could, you know, be like, oh, okay. But to be able to have that connection with a guy and be able to help them get better is great, you know, to see something you work on with a guy actually translate well.
Dwayne Jones, thanks so much for the time.
Oh, appreciate you. Thank you.
And that will do it for this week's episode. Want to thank St. Joseph's University assistant men's basketball coach Dwayne Jones for being our guest this week. Now, if you like this show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, go ahead and leave us a rating and a review. It would really help us out. Now, you can follow the show on the platform formerly known as Twitter, now known as X, at @1onpod. You can follow me there as well, at @MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at AboutAmazon.com.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.